The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
To infinity and beyond.
I just love finding new places to wear diamonds.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
There's no place like home.
Life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, that introduction means it's time for some more movie magic with Bill Hughes. And what a corker he has chosen today.
Dirty old man.
What happened?
I just got pinched in the elevator.
Well, now you know how the other half lives.
Look at that. I'm not even pretty.
They don't care, just so long as you're wearing a skirt. It's like waving a red flag in front of a bull.
Really? Well, I'm sick of being the flag. I want to be a bull again. Now, what do you say? Let's get out of here. Let's blow.
Blow where?
You promised me, Joe, that the minute we hit Florida, we were going to beat it.
How can we? We're broke.
Well, we could find another band, a male band.
Look, stupid. Right now, Spats Colombo and his chums are looking for us in every male band in the country.
So humiliating.
So you got pinched in the elevator. So what? Would you rather be picking lead out of your navel?
All right. But how long do you think we can keep this up?
What's the beef? We're sitting pretty.
Huh?
Look, we get room and board. We're getting paid every week. Look at the palm trees. Flying fish.
What are you giving me with a flying fish? I know why you want to stay here. You're after sugar.
Me after sugar?
I saw you, the both of you, in that bus all lovey-dovey and whispering and giggling and borrowing each other's lipstick. I saw you.
What are you talking about? Me and
you
sugar?
You and sugar.
We're just like sisters.
Well, I'm your fairy godmother.
Bill Hughes, what a terrific scene.
Oh, it's and the sparkle in that dialogue. And the sparkle in that dialogue for 1959, because so many things were happening there. They are clearly talking about sharing lipstick and stuff. So it means they're cross-dressing. And everybody knows that this is the movie where the two guys have witnessed the massacre of the St. Valentine's Day.
This is Some Like It Hot.
Some Like It Hot.
Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis are the guys.
Yeah.
And in that scene, they're dressed as ladies.
They've arrived at the hotel. They're on the run from the mafia. And the sugar that they're talking about is none other than Marilyn Monroe. And she plays the ukulele in the band as well as being the vocalist. So they're going to fight over her, but they're terrified that they are on the run from the mafia and that they'll be caught.
They have dressed themselves as women, made themselves up, wearing women's clothes, but being old hands at music, because they're musicians, they join a ladies' band as their disguise to try and prevent the mafia killing them.
Yeah, and this was completely without the permission of the motion picture production code. It flew in the face of everything that was around at the time. So they were really morally taking on Hollywood. And a lot of people say it was the final nail in the coffin.
Of the Hay Office.
The Hay Office.
The so-called Hay Office.
So, yeah. So they're getting dressed as women. And the first day of costume fittings, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, look in the mirror and Tony Curtis says, Jesus, we look like men. We look like men in frocks. This is never going to work. So they said, Ori Kelly, the most amazing costume designer, is doing Marilyn Monroe's gowns. Would Ori Kelly take a look at us? Ori Kelly, O-R-R-Y, look him up. You won't believe what he's done. He's won 3 Oscars. He's won an American in Paris and Les Girls, and he actually ended up winning the Oscar for this film, Some Like It Hot. So Ori Kelly starts pinning them into dresses, and suddenly they look amazing. And Jack Lemmon says, I think we could pass. And Tony Curtis says, well, the only way to find out is to try it. And he said, let's get into our full drag. And we're walking across the studio lot and we're going into the canteen and we're going to go into the ladies' room and we're going to work on our makeup in the mirror. And if anybody spots that we're men, then we're toast. And they walk over. Nobody bats an eyelid, so they say the movie can proceed.
They had to be coached how to walk like women and how to use their hands.
Yeah, a great drag artist at the time, female impersonator called Barbette, came in to train them in gender illusion, was the actual title of what it was. But they had to learn hand gestures and all that. But when they were being sewn into their costumes, Ori Kelly, he made a reference when he was pinning Marilyn into hers. And he said, you know, Tony Curtis has a better ass than you.
Ooh.
And she opened her blouse and turned around and says, yeah, but he doesn't have these. And Ori Kelly was horrified. Yeah. But Ori Kelly came to Hollywood and his first flatmate was Cary Grant. He died tragically young of cancer. And Cary Grant, Tony Curtis, Billy Wilder and George Cukor were his pallbearers. And his story is only being told now because his grandniece found his biography in manuscript form in a pillowcase. And it's just been published.
My goodness. Now, this was a movie that was supposed to be made in colour because of Marilyn's contract. She only appeared in colour.
She only appeared in colour. And then Billy Wilder, they did the test makeups and he brought them to her and he said, I'm afraid we have a problem. The guys are looking grotesque. And that's the word in colour. He said, we're going to have to do this in black and white. And she instantly said, yes. She said, I see that for this film to be pulled off and it's good. Because she fell in love with the script. Billy Wilder had no expectation of getting her. He fed the script out in the hope, but he really didn't expect. So when she came back and said yes, he was so thrilled because they had Mitzi Gaynor in the frame. It was going to be Mitzi Gaynor, which just wouldn't have been the
wouldn't
same.
Wouldn't have been the same. No.
And for the Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis parts, they had Frank Sinatra, Jerry Lewis and Danny Kaye all in line. And so they all fell by the wayside. And eventually Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon, Marilyn Monroe create this classic film.
Absolutely classic. Now, some of the scenes, I can recall one where they're travelling on the train and you have the girls chatting and but the girls are guys, so yeah. You've got Marilyn as Sugar chatting away as a girl to these other, but they're guys. But that must have driven the Hay Office insane.
Oh, completely.
Because they're in a kind of a sleeper thing.
Yeah, and you can imagine that at the time that was just breaking every taboo, every rule, because it was flirting with the idea of homosexuality. It was flirting with cross-dressing. Well, they were cross-dressing on screen. So it was breaking all the rules that this moral code was supposed to be protecting Americans from. And instead, people were falling about laughing in cinemas going, isn't this hilarious? And that therefore undermined the prudishness of the Hays Code. So.
And we'll have another scene here and you might like to introduce it. This is a dialogue. There's another disguise here for Tony Curtis. He pretends he's somebody else.
Tony Curtis, it's funny because of Ori Kelly coming into it and being the former flatmate of Cary Grant, and Cary Grant's name had come up in the chatting when they were preparing the role, and Tony Curtis decides he's going to channel Cary Grant as his disguise.
Because he is pretending he's a very wealthy yacht owner.
And he's pretending he's the heir to the Shell Oil fortune. And I mean, that's Billy Wilder, when he was casting Tony Curtis, said he has to be believable. When he says he's the heir to the Shell Oil, she has to understand that. So it can't just be any old schmuck. It's got to be somebody who looks like they've been well pampered.
So he's in
lives.
The blazer, the shirt, the cravat, and the nautical cap on the beach.
Haven't I seen you somewhere before?
Not very likely.
You staying at the hotel?
Not at all.
Your face is familiar.
Possible you've seen it in the newspapers or magazines, Vanity Fair.
That must be it.
Would you mind moving just a little, please? You're blocking my view.
Your view of what?
They run up a red and white flag on the yacht when it's time for cocktail.
You own a yacht? Which one is it? The big one?
Certainly not. With all the unrest in the world, I don't think anybody should have a yacht that sleeps more than 12.
I quite agree. Tell me, who runs up that flag? Your wife?
No, my flags do it.
Who mixes the cocktails? Your wife?
No, my cocktails do it. Look, if you're interested in whether I am married or not...
Oh, I'm not interested at all.
Well, I'm not.
That's very interesting.
Brilliant dialogue.
It's just bing, bing, bing. You know, they're getting to it. But it wasn't a completely happy set. She was 2 to 3 hours late every day. Every day. Billy Wilder called makeup at 6:30. Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon in the makeup chair every morning because it was going to take them till 9 o'clock to be women to go in front of the camera. They were ready from 9 every day in the heat of San Diego down at the Colorado.
Because they were masquerading this as Florida, but it was in fact in
it
California.
Yeah, the Coronado Hotel, which you can still visit. It's one of the big draws as a location for a movie. And so they were there. When Billy Wilder was asked in 1959 about filming another movie with Monroe, he said, "I've discussed this with my doctor and my psychiatrist, and they tell me I'm too old and too rich to go through this again." So it's like, but he loved her. The guys loved her. They took her out for drinks every night when they were finished, because when she would come in and deliver a take, she would nail it. Like that complicated scene in the top bunk on the train.
Yeah.
That was nailed in one take. But simple lines like, "Where's the bourbon?" 48 times it took her to get it right, because she was channeling how she was going to do it and stuff. But the money that they all made from the movie was quite exceptional for the time. Now, given the context of the time, because Monroe worked for 10% of the gross in excess of $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
And technically it grossed 20 million. So she was getting another 10% of that. Curtis was 5% of the gross over 2 million. And Wilder was 17.5% of the first million after break even and 20% thereafter. So they did all make money out of it in the context of the times.
But didn't they deserve it? The texter's saying, "Some Like It Hot, probably one of the best films ever made."
It's, oh, yeah. And it's widely regarded as such. It is widely regarded as such because it deserves it. It plays humour so well, and the sparkle in that script written by Billy Wilder and Izzy Diamond. And when you think that English isn't Billy Wilder's first language and he can be so funny in it, that he just is the Hollywood giant that we all treat him as these days, you know.
Well, brilliant movie, and more to come next week.
More
next
movie
week. Magic from Bill Hughes. Bill, thank you very much.